say names, starting with Domio.
Domio.
Mioju.
Mioju.
Mark.
Mark.
Bruce.
Bruce.
Sophia.
Janelle.
Janelle. David.
Bob.
Bob.
Mary.
Frankie. Frankie.
Shoketsu.
Pat.
Michelle.
Yashay.
Jim.
Dave.
Mark.
John.
James.
James.
In terms of announcements, the next thing is the pop-up, my house on the 13th of July, and the information is in the newsletter. Do you guys get the newsletter yet?
I signed up with my email, but I don't know if I've gotten it yet.
Okay, I'll make sure you get it. So anyway, it's on the 13th of July at 6 p.m. from 6 to 8, and I did write in the newsletter this time that if you RSVP me, then I would know how many plates and stuff I should get. So that would be good if you could do that. And maybe also what you're bringing, so that we don't have too much dessert or something. We did that for the holiday party, and that worked really well. So
you have too much dessert.
I didn't understand that.
What?
Nothing but cake.
What? Oh, yeah. Well, then you know it's dinner. Well, anyway,
so
you can bring up like a blanket, sit on the grass, or whatever.
Yeah, do you need people to help set up or clean up at the end, or bring extra
chairs?
Yeah.
Might take some chairs from here if that's okay. And
how many people do you need?
I don't know yet.
Okay, well, put a call out.
Sure.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I mean, you're welcome. I'll be there.
Yeah, it'll be nice. Then we have Rinzon, who is the teacher at MT Field.
No rank.
No rank, Sendo. He's a Rinzai teacher, and he's going to come do a talk on Sunday, the 14th at 11:15.
This time.
So we'll talk, and then we have a book group on the 20th, and I'm still reading Homeless Photo. And then the 21st is Shintai with our other teacher. We have two teachers, so Shintai is going to do the Dharma talk. And then July 27th, we have our poetry meeting, poetry circle that we meet, and we read and write poetry, and that's at 10 o'clock on the 27th. So that's all I have. And then the retreat's coming up.
You can still sign up for our session, out of town overnight retreat, August 20th through the 25th. You can arrive, the 20th is a Tuesday evening, or you can arrive Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. And on Tuesdays, not this coming Tuesday, but starting on July 9th, we'll be starting a series, a class series, focusing on Joanna Macy's book, Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In Without Going Crazy. And it's going to be, what I'm going to do is, I actually had copies of the books people could buy, but you can also order it online. I will present, we won't be reading it out loud, but I'll present the gist of each chapter, and then also some Buddhist, because it's not an explicitly Buddhist book, but I'll bring some at least one relevant Buddhist teaching or practice. And I don't know, I just think this is a really timely thing to be focusing on as a Sangha, if you are able to, you know, kind of plan to come to many of the Tuesdays. It's about, you know, using our practice to face what's going on, to respond with compassion, to find the strength. I see this as a wonderful opportunity, that actually we can transform our despair into great loving determination that we can transform our sense of overwhelm and paralysis into greater intimacy with other people because we need their support. So we end up having to create more connections. And yeah, finding ways to act in the world inconsistent with our heart. So I think it should be pretty cool.
Is that going to be every Tuesday, or are you going to alternate it
for rhinoceros? I'm going to do it every Tuesday because even every Tuesday it's like 12 weeks, and you know it'll go on forever if we don't just But it'll be. Every week will be a little different, and there'll be some other teachings and things involved as well. So, I think the one Tuesday, not when we're in session, obviously, won't be covering that book. Another very brief note: if you come and you do not mind walking a little bit, you can, instead of coming down our driveway, you can turn right and park behind my red car on the right side of that gravel road, which is a public street. It's a stark street, actually. Just pull off to the side. That frees up more space in the parking lot for people who, don't want to walk as far or can't or don't know about alternative parking arrangements. So if we can get in the habit of doing that, we can extend the amount of time that this building is a viable space for us, because the parking lot only has, I think, 17 spaces. So pretty regularly we fill it up. And I don't know about you, but I actually feel like my car is safer up there, because backing and getting out of this parking lot can be pretty crazy. And you also can park along the driveway. You see some people do that. So. All right.
So, just my regular announcement. Some of us go over to Market of Choice after we're done here and have lunch. They have tables that they have. It works really well because you don't have to have a waitress who says, "Are you having separate checks?" You just go through and find what you want, pick it out through the cashier, and then go upstairs, and we all sit together. You don't have to sign up. It's when you're available. Come on and join us. And it doesn't exactly have a prescribed topic. Sometimes it carries over from here. Sometimes it's something else entirely. But everybody's welcome if they like. And you don't have to come every night. You can come when you have fun.
Thank you very much for spearheading that. That has been my, when I look back at my history in Sangha, that was those lunches after Sunday practice were as important as the Zazen and teaching, Dharma friends. All right. I'll make my official Dharma talk begin. How much to the Buddha, how much to the Dharma, how much to the Sangha. So today is another talk on my 9 fields of Zen practice. This is on karma work. And for anyone who is not, I don't know if I have enough of these for everybody, but if you're curious, you don't know anything about what I'm talking about with the nine fields, you're welcome to take one of these. I'll just pass those around. Thank you.
And it's also available on the podcast.
Yes. Yeah, on my Zen Studies podcast website, there's a link to the nine fields Zen practice. So today we're talking about karma work. And the definition of karma is actually technically action, work, or deed. But in Zen, usually, or Buddhism, when we're usually talking about karma, we're talking really about the law of karma, which I think of as the law of moral or behavioral cause and effect. So it refers to actions and their results and the connection between them. Now, we also in Zen have an idea kind of personal karma. We talk about like my karma is to blah, blah, blah. And I guess the idea is that the traditional, which I'm totally agnostic or even atheist when it comes to are we reborn? My Buddhism does not depend on believing that. However, I do like it as a metaphor for our existence. It's actually a very it's kind of like rich mythology. It's almost as if it's true. So according to the Buddhist mythology of rebirth and this world, this cyclic world, which always includes suffering to some degree, the idea is we wouldn't even have been born if we didn't have unresolved karma. Like the very fact that you're here in a body means, you know, there's unresolved karma. So we don't look at it as like, because I think this kind of topic, karma work, can end up seeming like a continual self-improvement project, or we're trying to look for our problems and focus on our problems. When it's not, it doesn't have that kind of moral or judgmental overtone. It's just, hey, we all have unresolved stuff. And this lifetime is an opportunity to try to untangle or resolve as much of it as we can, to live more skillfully, more with more freedom, with more compassion, with more wisdom. We do our best. We clean up as much karma as we can in this lifetime. And then this is where I kind of like the metaphor. And you'll keep working next lifetime on the, you know, because the idea is that once you have it completely cleaned up, you wouldn't even be reborn in this world. So this idea that we have personal karma, that each of us has a karmic package that we've inherited from the limitless past. Who knows why and where we ended up, how we are, with our particular tendencies and strengths and weaknesses. And we're also influenced by, as we were reading the Why Buddhism is True, we're formed and influenced by natural selection, by our genetic heritage, by culture, by upbringing, experiences we've had, the karma of other people. So it's not all just a matter of our own behavior, and yet all of that has influenced our karmic package, who we are and the stuff we have to deal with. So the karma verse, or the contrition verse that we recited this morning at the beginning of service, is about this. All my past and harmful karma, born from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. I now acknowledge it, take responsibility for it, and I'm going to do my best with it. And this is really about letting go of blame or trying to figure out where stuff came from, although sometimes that can be helpful. But ultimately, whatever, I don't know. I don't know why I ended up like this, but I'm going to do my best to become, to live more compassionately and skillfully. So in terms of karma work is taking care of our lives, trying to cause less suffering, living with greater freedom, wisdom, and compassion, and ultimately it kind of comes down to changing habits. So this really is, you know, this is kind of what people think of when they think of religious or spiritual practice, is trying to be a better person. So this is included in Buddhism, but it's also balanced out by other stuff, which I'll get into later. So I'm just going to share a story of karma work from my own life. So again, you can't necessarily identify why you are the way you are, but sometimes you can see threads in your life as to, you know, what contributed. So I had a tough social experience growing up in school. I was very, very small. And then I think of myself as bigger than I am. So when I would look back on these pictures, and I always felt at a disadvantage, like I wasn't taken seriously. I'd never rated on, I was not people on people's social radar or something. And then I saw this picture that I hadn't seen for decades. And there I am in like, I think seventh or eighth grade. And I'm in the picture and I'm standing next to my friends at the time. And they're like this much taller than I am. I mean, they are just, and I'm just this little tiny, I look so small and young. And I'm like, oh, that was a kind of impactful big deal. That's a karmic, you know, it marked me karmically. So I was kind of, and I was nerdy and obstinate and smart and whatever. So I was picked on sometimes. Probably would have been much worse if I was a guy. So I learned to, it was a warring thing. I wanted to be visible. You know, being just completely ignored was painful. But on the other hand, I wanted to protect myself. So I needed some way to, you know, take my place, take my social place, but not be too vulnerable. So I learned to have sarcastic humor, to entertain or impress, and or to, when I had the opportunity, to create a sense of connection with, you know, oh, I know what you're talking about. You know, I had this experience, and kind of manufacturing a connection based on our shared experience and various kinds of social tools to make connections, social connections with people, but not really just be nice. Being nice or honest was a point of vulnerability. You know, if you really let people know what you wanted and what you cared and what you cared about, you were a sitting duck. So, you know. So anyway, this is part of that karmic past. So then, when I started practice, and, you know, now I'm kind of cultivating mindfulness and turning toward my habits, and, you know, my spiritual practice is telling me I should be responsible for this, I should examine it, I should see what's happening. So I noticed that I really didn't have much of a sense of real intimacy with people. I asked them very few real questions. I had very little curiosity about them. I was just worried about myself and how I came off to them socially. Very little silence. Because, you know, if I left the silence, you might just walk away because you're bored or you don't like me, or, you know, maybe you'll even say, I don't know, I just really don't like you. You know, if I don't leave that silence, though, then there's no opportunity for that, right? So we kind of keep a whole, like, social pantomime going on here. So I started noticing this and thinking just like, you know, this is it's painful to notice this, and yet I still couldn't do anything about it. It was a deeply ingrained habit. So looking more deeply at it, I started to notice that fear of rejection, that sense of inadequacy. And then I asked myself, is it worth facing this fear? in order to experience more authentic connection and intimacy. You know, and to actually be more supportive of other people instead of it just always essentially being about me, to actually get to know them. And then I thought, maybe it's worth facing this fear, especially because we're not in grade school anymore and people have matured and gotten kinder, you know, so, So I started to explore those possibilities of acting differently and very, very gradually began to change. So I'll return to this a little bit with when we're working with our karmic patterns, essentially with our habits, at first we notice that they exist. And as we hold that intention to work on them, usually we just notice after the whole karmic situation's played itself out. And we go, oops, that happened again. And then we start noticing a little sooner, and we notice while it's happening, but we still really can't do anything about it. Then we might notice before, well, this is probably going to be one of those, but then it all just kind of happens the way it usually happens anyway. But then it's kind of like we kind of start noticing sooner and sooner until, you know, really realizing, okay, I'm going to be going to sit down and having a conversation with somebody. You know, how do I really want to approach this? And then these little opportunities for acting differently open up. You know, instead of just like blah, 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 you know, doing my thing, I might have a moment where I go, how have you been lately? or rather than just assuming that I know how you feel and repeating a story that I think you're going to relate to, maybe saying, did you feel sad when that happened? You know, like actually with some curiosity and some investigation. So very, very gradually, things began to change. I cannot say, I am not going to say that I am like super reflective and present and, you know, whatever in my social interactions. I mean, our karma, you know, we never completely erase it. I'll always have these tendencies, but I don't feel completely enslaved by them anymore. I have more options. So that's an example of karma work, as I'm talking, meaning. Now, some of the things that I learned, so there's two different levels here. So there's, I change my behavior so that I'm actually hopefully a little better, you know, friend and person to interact with in the world and all this kind of stuff. So I was causing less suffering. So that's valuable in and of itself. But there's also what I learned in the process, you know, that deep-seated, long-standing beliefs can be completely untrue and irrelevant. That actually asking a question or opening up some silence or opening myself up to the possibility that this person doesn't want to talk to me anymore, it actually, you know, the results are usually good. It's actually not scary like I thought it would be. I learned it best if we let go of our sense of who we are and we're open to change. And that our sense of separateness and specialness, because we think we're special even if we think we're the worst. Almost especially if we think we're the worst, we think, you know, we're special, different. And that this is illusory and causes suffering. So there's like Dharma messages underneath this kind of work, which really means it's closely tied to the other field, the field of cultivating insight, where, you know, we've exposed ourselves to Dharma teachings and then we're really investigating them for ourselves. You know, really, what does emptiness of self really mean? What does it really mean to let go of dukkha? What is dukkha, you know? To explore those things. And I feel like karma work is really complementary to this. If we view it in the right way, if it's not just a matter of self-improvement and you know, beating ourselves up for not being a perfect person. But if we use our karma work as a way in to these deeper spiritual issues, which are usually underneath why we act the way we act. As Dogen said, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. And this is so this part of this study itself, it's our karmic self. As well as, you know, in some kind of abstract philosophical, the self is empty kind of way. It's also studying our karmic self. So we're not just sitting and contemplating the self, we learn through doing, through trying to keep the precepts, trying to open our heart to others, trying to accord with the Dharma in our daily activities, working with our karmic patterns of mind, heart, and body. So it's important to know that by karmic actions, we also mean thoughts and speech. So the idea is that you can take an action in your mind or with your speech or with your body or all of them. So what we think is also something that we observe and work on. And the law of karma, this is really cool. It means everything you do has an effect. So usually when we're working on our habits and trying to become better people, it's notoriously discouraging and frustrating. It's very difficult to make any headway in our significant karmic issues. So it's like, is this even worth it? I've been trying to work on this thing for years, and I don't know. But the kind of the law of karma says every little negative thing that you've done has led to this habit. You know, every time you make a slight positive change or a shift in trajectory, it will make a difference in the long run. So that's kind of an optimistic message. And we don't have to achieve radical change in order for our karma work to be extremely important and useful. I mean, honestly, I don't think we actually end up changing all that much. I had high hopes that I would, you know, effectively change. But we can loosen up around our issues. We can understand them more clearly. We can be more skillful around them and let go of them more quickly. We can say, you know, I'm sorry about that. I have a tendency to act like this. And, you know, and we can mitigate some of the harm that we might end up causing. And it's kind of like, in some ways, it's the thought that counts. We keep trying. That's what we do. You know, you wouldn't just fold your arms and go like, yeah, well, you know, sometimes I'm a real bitch, but that's just my karma. So, I'll leave it there. Comments or questions?
Thanks, everyone, for your last remark, because so many times it can be so flippant about our issues, you know, and our practice is more holy than that. So, reflecting yourself, or so, and it's thank you for that.
I have a question, Domiel. So, this karma work is a gradual seeing, working with, and so when I was at Sashin, the teacher said, like you said, it never goes away, you just learn to hold it differently. Mm. Right? But what I was thinking was, when you have this face-to-face transmission, mind-to-mind transmission in Zen, where the teacher and the student are in interaction, and so, you know, all this question of like Zen is so intellectual, where is the love in Zen and all. But I was thinking the other day, like when the teacher tells the student, when the teacher is transmitting something to the student, what is it that it's, the teacher is transmitting? It's nothing but that you are actually whole and you are the Buddha. That's all they're transmitting, and that to me is an act of supreme love, right? So my question is, so you have this gradual karma work which you have to do, but then when you have someone tell you you're whole and you're the Buddha, that can change you in a fundamental way, so your karma just naturally you become more compassionate and more loving, because if you are like that, then everybody's like that, right?
Thank you for bringing that up. That was the part I skipped over at the end, to just go ahead and end that. The essential part of our practice is that we're working on the absolute and relative at the same time. So we're trying to let go of all of our distinctions, all of our dualistic thinking, and awaken to in what sense life is precious just as it is, that we are precious just as we are, that everything is complete, that nothing needs to be fixed. And at the same time, we do this gradual work. And then if we do only one or the other, our practice is incomplete. If we're just working on ourselves and trying to improve and be a good person, I don't know, that's a point of huge despair. We're always going to be inadequate. On the other hand, if we're just like, we're going to blow off the karma work because I just want to see in what way I'm ultimately perfect just as I am, or I awaken to that and then I just blow off the karma work, that's incomplete too. That's not how life actually works.
I was just thinking that will influence your karma.
Oh yeah, so, but we work on both, because as I was just talking about, the karma work actually can lead you toward cultivating insight, can lead you toward enlightenment, and the appreciation in which the sense that everything is precious just as it is like, it's so much easier to do karma work when you feel like that. It's so much, because you realize you are not defined by or defiled by your karma. At the most important level, you have a Buddha nature. So that's, you know, then it can be a much lighter. Like initially when I was working on karma work, it was just like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I think most of us alternate between kind of arrogance and self-deprecation, you know, because it's much of the time we think we're super, but then we think we're terrible, and it's just a lot of times, you know, for me it felt like I was holding higher standards for myself than I held for other people. Like, yeah, that's totally fine that you're like that, but I shouldn't be like that. So therefore it's just a roller coaster of our sense of self-worth. So then, you know, tackling these karma things, like my teacher started pointing me, especially when I became a monk, toward my deep-seated arrogance. And that, ironically, was the most troubling and humiliating karmic issue that I could imagine. In a way, anything's better than arrogance in my mind. You know, you can have all kinds of shortcomings, but if you're stuck in arrogance, you're blind and you're no good to other people. And so I was like, oh my, you know, so I felt awful about this. Just like, oh my God, like, I've got the original sin, right? I'll never make it. And I guess having, you know, touched in what way, you know, I have a Buddha nature, now makes me go, you know, like, we're saying, just like, you know, when something shows up, you just like, oh, there it is again, you know. Sorry, there's my arrogance. But it's not me. It's something I have to take responsibility for, but it does not define me. And that makes all the difference. So I wanted to ask people, what is something, and you don't have to share, but if you want to take a moment to reflect, what is something you would like to change about yourself? And this should be something significant, not losing weight or spending less money or whatever, but a way you tend to think or speak or behave that causes suffering for yourself or others. And how have you worked on this issue in the past? What approaches to karma work have been fruitful for you? And what approaches have really not been helpful? And if you are willing, can you share one success that you've had around this issue? Meaning, you know, an insight or an increased sense of acceptance or peace, an ability to act or think a little differently.
It's probably not the biggest thing, but it's something I've been thinking of a bit lately. It's a kind of arrogance. It's the way that I want to take responsibility or even ownership of the way that other people respond to me. There's a kind of an arrogance to, well, your reaction to me would be better if only I were different, right? There's a way that denies what's going on with the other person, denies their individuality. It requires you to first try and take responsibility for something that you don't really control. And I see a lot of ways that's been following me around throughout my life. And then, at least in terms of success, it's enabled me, seeing how I was doing that in the past has enabled me to let go of some of the things that have happened in the past. Mm. I tend to have a very strong negative reaction to people's negative reactions to me. And a few months ago, somebody made a wisecrack that implied that I irritate them. And I carried it home with me and spun up the way that I always used to spin up. And working out strategies for avoiding this person and staying off their toes. And at some point I caught sight of it, you know. And I just let it go. It was too vague. But, you know, it was just like, oh, that's me doing that thing again. Maybe I don't need to act on any of that. And it didn't produce change. Whereas it would have produced extreme self-consciousness. It would be a thing that arose in the past. What does not work with this, absolutely does not work with this, is the thing that I usually do, which is stop doing that. Stop doing that. For me, the work seems to be 99% seeing.
Thank you.
that's kind of interesting what you said. I know that sometimes I approach the precepts like my attitude towards precepts, like I'm getting ready for confession, and I have a list that I go down and I figure out where I'm doing well and where I'm doing poorly in order to fix or purge or cleanse myself. And that approach is not really helpful. And so I think the reason I'm here is to help myself shape a different approach. Mm. The same precepts, but a gentler way of living with what are not necessarily my faults, but are my characteristics. I can't tell if that was on track.
Thank you.
It's probably on the surface doesn't sound much like a character flaw, but I always seem to have this need to be productive and be working. And I think what I kind of realize is underneath that is a real deep sense of inadequacy, that if I just sit still and don't produce and don't have anything to show for my existence, what good am I? And I was telling Pat, you know, I tried to deal with it. I went to a monastery because you have to be still in a monastery. What I found out was the schedule is relentless. I mean, from the time I got up in the morning, my time was scheduled, and I worked really hard until I went to bed. And I remember the first time I kind of got my laundry done and my stuff done, and I still had rest time left. It's like, what do you mean it's rest time? But there's no TV, there's no radio, there's no novels. What am I going to do with my rest time? Mm-hmm. And I still get that kind of anxiety. If I spend an afternoon and have not cleaned or done laundry or worked outside or done something to show for it, clean my car, it's like to be worth something, I have to be doing something all the time. So part of my plan is I come here and I even go to lunch and I'm just trying to not go to a monastery, but to spend more time where I can just be still. And it's like, okay, here. I'm not in trouble if I'm still here. Does that make any sense? If you have any advice for me, I welcome it.
I relate to that so much. And I honestly think that is why it's really good for me to have a significant other that I have to spend time with. And honestly, like, in my mind, I mean, please, no one take this personally, but socializing, watching TV, reading novels, part of me really thinks it's all a waste of time. And so it's hard for me to make myself do it. But, you know, with my husband every night, we sit down and watch TV. And it's like I can make an argument that anything useful is going on there.
You know what my son said to me last night? He said, Mom, could you come watch a movie with me and not fold laundry and do things while you're watching?
I mean, I feel like it is a practice.
Yeah.
And some on occasion, I haven't had time to do it lately because I have so many projects, but reading a mystery novel. Now, reading anything else, I go for nonfiction because that's educational.
Exactly.
And I go for, or a novel because, you know, that might be literature and, you know, you're kind of broadening the mind. But a mystery novel, you really can't argue there's anything useful there.
Well,
so you have to make a practice of going out to lunch and just staying until
I am, and I stay right to the end, and I actually love it.
Thank you. But there really is there's spiritual stuff under there.
I think it's an adequacy of I need to be proving my worth all the time.
You can actually use a little bit more of that. Getting more done. I can give more nothing than she can.
Zero up in the chip.
Sins in a group of 20 strangers. I've never actually had a problem with that. Well, another of my sins, which many of you have heard before, is that I have flashes of rage. It's never aimed at people. It's never very deep. It's just, I want to be really productive and get everything done, and something gets in my way. Like a computer glitch or a Xerox machines are really bad, traffic, whatever. And I only tend to do this when there's nobody else around.
Except your parents.
Yeah. Except my parents, which I have confessed before that my parents, one of them, swears. And in my voice. and this has just been a, because when Mark was talking, I was thinking of how some of our karmic stuff, our karmic entanglements, end up melting away pretty easily when we see them. Like the one that I talked about with my conversation. I mean, it took a little while, but once I saw it and I developed the intention to change it, it really shifted. This one, I've been sitting for 25 years. I've been ordained for almost, close to 20 now. And sometimes when this happens, I think, oh my God, what if, like, Jinryu has the key to my house because she comes and borrows my dog for pet therapy. And sometimes I just think, oh my God, what if she could come at the door? And she heard me doing this. I don't know. What certainly does not work is the stop it. Is the just, this is irrational and bad and just stop it and don't do this. I have tried everything. Once I did, I had those little clicker counters. I carried it around with me all day and I clicked every time I had one of these little episodes. And I had a lot more of them. Like, it was just like, it was like putting that kind of pressure on just pissed me off even more. And I don't know. So I feel like sometimes there are these karmic things which, and maybe in a way, these are the ones that are tied to our deepest koans. And my teacher pointed out to me that, because I was confessing this to her, and she said, well, part of your strength is that you get a lot done, is that you, go on forward, that you have this energy. And so part of one of the drawbacks of that is if something gets in your way, then there is this response. So it's, not entirely a evil thing. And then I've also noticed when I'm experiencing that, if I really let myself experience it, and don't try to argue with it or make it go away or have any kind of agenda, I notice that I'm feeling really stressed and overwhelmed. Like if I look within like that, the part of me that if I turn compassion toward myself, there's a part of me that's going like, it's so busy and I got too much stuff to do and now this thing is getting in my, and it's like a totally different energy. If I'm reacting with anger, but actually inside there's a sense of stress and just kind of like, well, that's very interesting. So I feel like sometimes we're, these things don't yield to our intentions to fix them right away. I feel like sometimes you're just like, kind of put it on the back burner. You know, I've got this irritability stew I've been working on. You know, sometimes, occasionally, some I get a little insight about it, but it's still on my burner. But I do have this deep faith based in my practice that it can be resolved and that I will learn something as I do so, something very important. I'll leave it there. Thank you very much for coming.